Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, the 15th of June. Now, a top story today, it's being announced under 16s are going to be banned from using social media. Sites like TikTok, Snapchat and Instagram will be off limits in a bid to protect young people from online harms. The Prime Minister says he's giving children their childhood back and the ban's due to come into force early next year. Well, Lucy's been getting reaction today. She's been speaking to Zoe Cairns, who's a social media consultant based in Rochester.
It's trying to get that balance, and I think it is a great move, but also in the back of my mind I'm thinking, how are they going to be able to progress with skills connecting and the pace of how technology moves so quickly? Is 16 going to be too late in their educational years for them to then like get up to speed with all of that?
Yeah, I know there have been two sides of this, haven't there? Yeah. Even, you know, online safety campaigners can't seem to agree on whether an outright ban is the way to go. But it's certainly a big move, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a massive move. And, you know, it's also thinking about, you know, it's not going to happen immediately. And that's what I've seen all online. Like, you know, Keir Starmer's banned social media today. Our accounts are going to be taken away. And it's not going to happen straight away because it's all about, you know, taking this forward, legislation, laws being put into place. So, it is a big move.
Do you think this will provide a little bit of reassurance for parents that they can kind of stop under 16s being on social media? And it's the law rather than, you know, them being upset with their own parents for not letting them on those apps.
It's going to be a challenging one because there's like, even with what's happened in Australia have done the same. That's how we followed suit. But they've even found ways of how children have got around the different ways of accessing their accounts. So I think there's two things here. Number one is the parents, you know, there's going to be a law, which is great because they can enforce that a little bit more with the younger people. But also it's also still monitoring them to make sure that they are still following the rules and regulations or monitoring them in the right way.
And obviously, we know it's not coming in straight away. I think they've said early next year it will come into force if it all goes through in terms of the legislation. What kind of adjustment will that be for teenagers, you know, maybe 14, 15-year-olds who are so used to having social media and then won't be allowed on it anymore until they're 16?
I think it's going to be a massive adjustment. If you think about, I was watching some of the case studies online of the young people that had gone into schools and they were looking at their screen time, and it's like on Saturday they spent 10 hours and it was like, they said, oh, I only thought I spent 2 to 3 hours online, but now what am I going to do with my time? And the person interviewing them said, well, what about getting out with friends or reading a book? And they said, well, I've never really done as much as that before. I'm playing with them online. And so it's going to be a huge adjustment to their everyday life in what they're doing.
We've also had a statement through from campaign group Whitstable Unplugged. It says, we welcome the Prime Minister's decision to introduce a social media ban for under 16s. For too long, young people have been exposed to the harmful effects of social media on their mental health, sleep, well-being and development. They go on to say this is an important step towards giving young people the freedom to spend more time connecting with friends, family and their communities in the real world. Well, we'd love to know what you think today. Is a ban on social media for under 16s the right way to go, or is it depriving them of an online community? You can share your thoughts via our social media. You can also get in touch by emailing news@thekmgroup.co.uk.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories: in a man's due in court later charged with murder after a body was found at a property in Margate. Police were called to the High Street last Thursday morning and the family of missing 31-year-old Nathan Jermy have been told about the discovery. Bradley Cooper, who's 40 and from Eaton Road in the town, is due before magistrates. A woman's also due in court charged with assisting an offender. Another man's been bailed and a 17-year-old girl's in custody. A man in his 40s has died following a crash opposite a Lidl store near Maidstone. The car he was driving came off London Road in Ditton and hit a tree and fencing on Saturday afternoon. He was flown to a London hospital but later passed away. Investigations are ongoing. A Gillingham man who stole 30 laptops from Medway Maritime Hospital has avoided being sent to prison. Jason Panter, who worked as an IT specialist, was caught on CCTV taking the equipment. The 48-year-old from Ferndale Road has been given a suspension suspended sentence, but ordered to pay £9,500 in compensation. Now, next on today's episode, the boss of a Canterbury bar that was forced to close following a huge fire next door hopes they could reopen before the end of the summer. Tokyo Tea Rooms had to close when a blaze broke out in the derelict Odeon Cinema in St George's Place on Valentine's Day. Owner Louise Jones-Roberts says she's had a positive update in the past few days.
The equipment is now moving to site for the demolition works to progress. It's been signed off by HSE England, so Health and Safety Executive, and the demolition works will be commencing any day now. So yes, really, and I think actually they'll be able to start working through it fairly rapidly. They've got to be safe. I mean, the structure is hugely unsound, so they've got to make sure that their teams are safe and that the area is safe, and they've got some phenomenal technology to make sure all of the bits as they're demolishing don't fly out into the atmosphere, and then they hoover it all up. So it's really clever stuff. And yeah, we're really excited. We're hoping that actually we're going to be in a position to open in the next couple of months. So fingers, toes, everything crossed for that.
Oh, fantastic. So you could potentially be open before the end of the summer.
Well, I'm end of August is what we are aiming for, because we've got to get back on our feet. We've got to get the staff back over there and get the site up and running. But we're so excited to be able to give our people back the venue that they want and the nights that they want. So fingers crossed. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just been such, I mean, that was February, wasn't it? It was Valentine's Day. I remember it because of the date. So, oh, goodness me, such a long, long time. But do you know that your building is structurally sound? Are you okay, or are you going to need any work done in there?
We were incredibly fortunate in that regard. Our building is absolutely untouched, not even smoke damage, which is phenomenal when you consider the size of the fire. So it is literally just about getting next door down to a height where everybody is comfortable, that nothing can fall, that everything's under control, and then we'll be looking to reopen.
Three boys were arrested in connection with the blaze. They remain on bail.
Kent Online reports.
A Kent MP is leading a new attempt to legalise assisted dying in England and Wales. Lauren Edwards, who's the Labour rep for Rochester and Strood, says it'll make a real difference for people who are terminally ill and their families. The bill was previously passed in the Commons, but stalled through the House of Lords and ran out of time in the parliamentary session earlier this year. A Reform UK councillor in Kent has announced he's leaving the party just 7 months after joining. Robbie Lammas defected from the Conservatives last October and became Reform's deputy leader on Medway Council. He's blamed his decision on disorganisation, infighting and incompetence at every level. Resident doctors in Kent won't be going on strike today as planned. Action has been called off and their union, the BMA, will be having discussions with government over pay instead. James Murray is now in charge of those negotiations after the previous health secretary resigned. Well, Lucy's been chatting to Medway GP Dr. Julian Spinks.
My experience over the years is that a change in politicians often does bring some change in attitude or negotiation or whatever. Where Streeting had become very sort of fixed in his position. And famously, when the last strike happened, he then withdrew the offer that was going to actually train more doctors and get over some of the problems we have with capacity, which was a little strange. I hope then the new Secretary of State will be a little bit more flexible, but it also needs flexibility on both sides. I did negotiating training a few years ago, and you were told you negotiate until both of you are equally dissatisfied with the outcome. You never rarely have, or very rarely have, a winner one way or the other. But we do need to get this sorted out.
Kent Online reports.
Part of the Sheppey Crossing remains closed today for emergency repairs. One lane's been shut on the A249 southbound, heading off the island since Friday evening. Repair work on a faulty bridge joint is expected to take all day, and drivers are being told to expect congestion. Plans to build flats on the site of a former car sales garage near Folkestone have been rejected by a planning inspector. Developers had wanted to put 8 properties in a 5-storey block on the Riviera plot on Sandgate High Street. It was decided the project was out of keeping with the surrounding area. It's been revealed a council in Kent has spent £9,000 on legal action against an animal sanctuary. Happy Pants Ranch was given 9 months to leave a 20-acre plot in Eyewade near Sittingbourne in December 2024 after moving there without the right permissions. Swale bosses have also taken action over noise from the site. They've not commented on the amount of money spent. Next, and an unpaid carer from Canterbury has been telling the Kent Online podcast about the strain it can put on your finances as new research is released. A survey's found 92% of people who look after a loved one have faced financial difficulties. Katie Stiles had to give up her job as a teacher after her husband was diagnosed with a rare form of motor neurone disease. She says more awareness and support is needed.
We don't sometimes recognise ourselves as carers. It personally took me 2 years, which, you know, I'm quite ashamed about, really, when I think about it. When I was looking after my husband full time, I didn't realise that I was a carer. But also, I don't think the general public actually know how all consuming caring can be for lots of different carers, not just in Kent, but across the country. You know, they're not just making cups of tea and getting prescriptions and sorting out shopping. They're doing some really amazing, you know, keeping people alive using things like PEG feeding and tube feeding. They're also, you know, maybe running a hospital at home bed for the person that they care for, so that they're not in hospital. So yeah, it's very all consuming and really important that we understand the depth and breadth of caring.
Absolutely. And of course, it's a role that so many people are proud to do and are happy to do for a loved one. But it can, as you say, have a big impact and as well, sort of financially and emotionally. Can you tell me a bit about that and how that impacted you and other people you work with?
Yeah, so I think really the thing to say is that, you know, 600 people leave a job for their caring role every day. And so that has a huge financial impact. There's been some new research out today, which says, you know, 92% of carers feel financial strain. So not only are we all struggling with cost of living, but it's much, much harder when you're a carer and you've had to cut your work down from, you know, full time to part time and then probably leave because it's just too much to do on top of everything else. And that has a huge impact because you can't sort of like pull an extra shift or find extra money from somewhere. You're just using your own resources, you know, whether that's on your rent, on your bills, because actually providing care for somebody costs. So it might be, you know, petrol costs have gone up and you're still traveling back and forth to support somebody that you know, their own home. So yeah, it's really tricky. And I went personally from being a full-time teacher to a part-time teacher, and then it just wasn't compatible to be a teacher at all. So yeah, it's had a big impact on me personally as well as lots of other people. I've personally been campaigning for a national carer strategy for over 8 years because I think that would show government, especially, you know, what all the different departments, where that butts up against carers' lives. And it's really, really important that, you know, the Department of Transport knows, you know, that there are people, you know, that during the day need to be at a certain place to support the person that they're caring for. And, you know, if you haven't got the hospital bus route right, then that has an impact. So there's all of that. I think also caring wise, the society as a whole, you know, I think probably during the pandemic, they sort of understood it a little bit because they were looking after neighbours or keeping an eye on somebody. But as soon as that finished, people's lives went back to normal on the whole. But carers, you know, that was our life and still is our life. You know, that isolation, that not being able to attend a family events or whatever it is because you've got your caring role. It's just too complex to get into town because the accessibility isn't great. I mean, it's all of these things that butt up against carers' lives, education, whether you're actually a young carer and you're supporting, a parent or a sister or a brother. So, and then the care school doesn't necessarily recognise that you're a carer either. So there's all sorts of things that we could legislate for that would make a big, huge difference.
Kent Online News.
Figures seen by the Kent Online podcast show income from parking across Canterbury, Whitstable and Herne Bay dropped by almost £500,000 in the past year. Nearly 200,000 fewer car park trips have been recorded since the City Council brought in a new charging strategy 2 years ago. Bosses say more people are travelling on public transport, footfall is up and the use of park and ride is also increasing. That's one of our most read stories on today's website. Dartford Town Council could become largely car-free meantime, with a mix of homes, shops and maybe a cinema or live music venue. £30 million plans to regenerate the former co-op building between Spittle Street and Hythe Street have been recommended for approval. The local council bought the site last year, with bosses saying they want to create a high-quality mixed-use neighbourhood. Plans have been unveiled to create a new woodland in Kent. Forestry England bought a 163-acre plot on land near Ashford last year and say a section will be transformed with trees including willow, oak and hornbeam. We're told it'll become a valuable habitat for wildlife. And a school in Herne Bay has been praised for the work it's done to get more children playing during break and lunchtime. Hampton Primary has been given the highest possible accreditation for the quality of its outdoor play provision, putting it in the top 1% in the country. Danny Greenstock is the deputy head teacher.
In a child's primary education, 1.4 years of their education is spent outside at play. And here at Hampton, we've spent the last 2.5 years really adapting our play. So children have so many more opportunities to learn how to play again. I think children have forgotten how to play. I think that across our country, I don't think parents realise what play looks like within a primary school setting. And for us, it's been so important we invite our parents in for them to see how play is so important. I know that, in the last generation, there's been a 50% reduction in the time that children get to play outdoors. So play in schools, that's why it's so much more important now, more than ever, for us to give children those play opportunities, learn those 16 different play areas and, really thrive.
I guess there are many, many reasons, aren't there, Danny, as to why there's been a decrease in the amount of time children spend outside playing. Safety, obviously, for a lot of parents is a huge issue, and perhaps the introduction of a lot more tech. But I guess school is one of the safest places, isn't it, for children to be able to go outside and play. Have you noticed, though, that there has been a change in kids being able to perhaps use their imagination, or the games are different, maybe even since COVID, because of that time when they were having to stay inside a bit more?
We've noticed a huge change in that. I think, looking back 3 years ago here, the play opportunities, sport is so important, absolutely is. But for those children who are not sporting, it was about what are we doing for those children? Are we giving our children opportunities for that, for their creativity? Are we giving them opportunities to take risks? And, for us joining the Opal scheme, 2.5 years ago now, and seeing how far we've come, it's important for us that safety has to be important. It is there. But our children, all of our children here, know the phrase dynamic risk assessment. They know that when they go to play, they have to risk before they actually action that. We've got balance lines across our trees now that children know. We do Opal play assemblies every other week, and we talk about how this is coming out for you in the next couple of days. How can we be safe with this? It's about adults stepping back, and that's been a huge culture change here. Our adults were scared, their parents were scared when we first initially started this. But it's about giving children that autonomy.
Absolutely. You mentioned there like the balance beams that you've got outside. What sorts of other kit has been introduced?
Because we've got a Key Stage 1 and a Key Stage 2, because we're a large three-form entry school, we've had to do everything twice, which has been quite a large feat. But again, we've managed it. We've got in every Key Stage a large sand pit for the children. We have gym equipment that was already there. There's den building opportunities. We have mud kitchens, slides, lots of loose parts are outside for them too. We have in Key Stage 2 a caravan that we got donated for free. We've turned that into a reading retreat. We had a local artist come in and paint the outside of it for us. Just lots and lots. We did a parent bingo form, class bingo form, and had lots of loose parts on it. And the children had a week to complete the bingo form. And I gave it out on the Friday, and by the Monday, half of the classes had already bought in all the resources they wanted to bring in and completed their bingo forms for all of our loose parts. Because it is about, it's not about us directing play anymore. It's about us giving them the resources for our children to create their own play, their own learning. So yeah, it's just been brilliant.
Kent Online Sport.
Cricket first up, and Kent have stormed to victory in their county championship match against Lancashire. New signing Hassan Mahmood took 6 wickets in the second innings, with Kent winning by 140 runs with a whole day to spare. They're now second in the Division 2 table with 3 wins in their last 4 games in the longer format. And in tennis, Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's proud of her performances at the Queen's Club Championship despite losing in the final. The British number one from Orpington is still waiting for a first title since the US Open in 2021 after defeat in straight sets to Donna Vekic. She's expected to play at Wimbledon, which starts in a fortnight. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.